The Jericho Network on Westwood One.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It is the pod of thunder and rock and roll. And today, right here on the show, I have got England's number one podcaster, Scroobius Pip, is here. He is the Adam Carolla of England, shall we say. He's a beat poet, a rapper, an actor, a comedian, a very hilarious guy with an amazing name of Scroobius Pip. How did he get that name? I have no idea. We're going to find all of that out. That's one of the cool things I love about doing this show is I get a chance to travel around the world. I did Scroobius's podcast when I was over there for Fozzy. He's a big Fozzy fan. We had a blast. And then as a result, I decided I want to have him back on my show and bring him overseas, so to speak, for you guys to hear. How could you not be curious about a guy called Scroobius Pip? I know I was. He's here today. Fun conversation about music and acting and how his podcast got off the ground, where he got his crazy name. We're going to talk movies. Scroobius Pip was in Guy Ritchie's latest film. He'll tell us all about that. He's also in Kurt Sutter's last show, The Bastard Executioner. Scroobius, all over the place. He's going to make you laugh, which is good. We've had some pretty heavy shows last week between the true story behind The Conjuring, enough to get you shivering, and then, of course, the inside story on the Benoit family tragedy with Sandra Toffoloni. If you have not listened to either one of those shows, go back and listen. They will make you think, especially the Benoit family tragedy. Close to home for me, but gave me a little bit of closure, and I really enjoyed it. She was a great guest, and so is Scroobius, and so was Jake the Snake when he did my show last year and a half ago, whatever it was. And there's an incredible, incredible documentary that's come out a few months ago called The Resurrection of Jake the Snake. It's the brainchild of Diamond Dallas Page and director Steve Yeun. They put the documentary together. It's an inspiring story. It's a heartwarming story. It'll piss you off. It'll make you laugh. It'll make you cry, everything in between. One of the best documentaries I've ever seen, and that's a true story. If you don't like wrestling, don't matter. You'll still dig this film. An incredible story about one man's battle back from certain death to reclaim his life, his family, and his career. You'll laugh, you'll cry, you'll cheer, you'll yell at Jake. Trust me, I did. You'll be inspired, most importantly, at the end of this doc. And it's now on DVD and Blu-ray, and it's a must-have in your collection. Dallas and his boys have put so much time and work into the collector's edition DVD. 20 bonus features, including a commentary track narrated by Dallas, Jake, and director Steve Yeun. Right now, you can get the collector's edition of The Resurrection of Jake the Snake at ddpyoga.com/Jericho. And if you use my promo code Y2J, you'll get 10% off anything you buy for a limited time, anything on his site. You've got to see this documentary. You've got to use the DDP Yoga program. You'll be inspired. You'll get in the best shape of your life, mentally, physically. That's what happened with Jake the Snake. Diamond Dallas Page literally saved Jake the Snake Roberts' life, and it's all documented in this film, and it's documented in the program. Be inspired. Do it. Give DDP Yoga and the DDP Yoga Now app a try yourself. This app is incredible. One of my favorite apps I have on my phone. I don't have to use the DVDs anymore. I use it all on the app. So you can too. You can too. Feel better, look better, and think better. DDPYoga.com/Jericho. DDPYoga.com/Jericho. Come on, man. Hip. Damn, boom, bam, get off your ass and jam. It's time to get in the best shape of your life with ddpyoga.com/Jericho. Go try it now. And hey, don't forget to mark your calendars. It's March 15th, 2017. Say with me now, it's the biggest podcast ever. That's Mick Foley joining Talk is Jericho. The countdown has begun. Each day gets closer to the biggest podcast ever. Foley versus Jericho. It's coming up. All right, so we're back here in the Fozzy tour bus in the illustrious back lounge.
Beautiful.
Beautiful, yes. And I thought I wanted to impress you, Mr. Pip.
Yeah.
Mr. Scroobius Pip, which is one of the greatest names.
Yeah, thank
you. People won't forget that name.
No, it sticks. It sticks. It's distinctive, right?
Yeah, and the thing is, when I started doing my podcast, Talk is Jericho, obviously, people kept saying, you got to do Scroobius Pip,
yeah.
Scroobius Pip. And so a few weeks ago, I went and did your show and got just amazing reactions.
Yeah, they seemed to love it. It went down so well online. It was hilarious to me because the guests by chance, the guest that you had the week after was Luke Harper, who's got a similar look to me. So loads of people were like, I thought we went on Talk is Jericho and you were on there straight away. So I was like, well, there you go. There's
just saw the big, yeah, the big beards.
Exactly, saw the big beard.
But you know what I liked about it was reading some of the – because you do – first of all, you do a great job of promoting your show on social media.
Yeah, I've kind of I've all my career, I've lived and died off social media. I've kind of – because I've never – when we had our first big single, we talked to major labels and we decided to go with an independent label instead of with the majors. And therefore, all of our promotion over all the years has been that direct talking to the fans rather than, you know, anything else, rather than having big budgets for big ad campaigns or anything else. So, yeah, on with the podcast, because it's essentially a one-man show, it's kind of, it's always, it's been about that, drawing them in a bit with the social media and... and yeah, and getting everyone on board.
When we talked about that on your podcast, which is called Distraction Pieces, by the way, which is a great show, and we talked about that when I was on about how social media is so important now, because nobody is buying ads or really promoting. It's pretty much up to you to do that.
Yeah, completely. And it's a tough one. I think it's an interesting time because people always say how in the digital age, you don't need labels and stuff like that. I think that's true to an extent, but it depends on your kind of character and your personality and what kind of band you are. If you're the kind of person who can engage in that way, then that's great. But if you're not, then you need someone to teach you how to do that or to walk you through it. And it's, yeah.
And the thing I liked to get back is was reading the comments on your Instagram about people who had no idea who I was, saying, I didn't know Chris Jericho, but I really enjoyed the show.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what I like to do with my show, is to bring on people that you might not be familiar with.
Completely.
But if you like me, trust me that you'll like this guest.
I've always had a thing. It's weird. I think you mentioned on my one, the Jonathan Ross show, bizarrely. And it's something I've always used as an example, because I'm a big fan of Jonathan. He's going to come on the podcast at some point. But when I started doing my podcast... Yeah, exactly. When I started doing my podcast, I realized, for an example, is the Jonathan Ross show. There's four or five huge A-list stars on every week, and he gets millions of viewers. He would still get those millions if he had two or three A-list stars and one or two people that are just interesting as am I allowed to swear? Sorry.
Sure.
I always need
go
to,
for
to,
it.
To check this. just interesting people, and you can have that balance. So I've had people like Wes Borland and Russell Brand and yourself that are, you know, are big known names, but then I've also had a huge variation of people. So over the years, I've now got this core fan base who kind of trust me and will listen regardless. You know what I mean? It won't just be about who's on this week.
Yeah.
It will be, we're going to listen regardless and take it in.
And that's the secret. Yeah. For example, in the States, there's Jimmy Fallon now to host The Tonight Show.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I'll watch that because I love Jimmy. He's very entertaining.
Yeah,
he's hugely. Always got the little skits at the beginning of the show and stuff. And then the guest comes on. Obviously, there's some guests that you are excited about. And other ones, never heard of this person. But it's The Tonight Show, so I'll watch it and check it out.
Oh, I did. I've not toured America because I do music as well. I should explain that.
I want to have you on the show because there'll be a lot of people that have no idea who the hell you are.
Exactly. So the last time I toured America was about 4 or 5 years ago, and we did something like 25 shows in 26 days. It was intense, and on the day off, we did the Carson Daly show, and it was a similar thing where it was like Carson and his people were just into our stuff, and we were like, we've not really earned our way onto this, but it was great that they were like, no, I think our fan base will like you, so come on and do your thing. So it was great to get to do things like that, to have that exposure and again, it's easy to just book big name after big name after big name. So it's great when shows are open to that and to push things out there.
Let's discuss it first of all. And the reason why I brought up your name first, Scroobius Pip, is it really describes who you are. And I'm a Scroobius Pip in a way as well. So explain what that is.
So I got the name from an Edward Lear poem. And again, that makes me sound far more well-read and intelligent than I am. I actually heard about it I was working in a record store and we sold books of dogs' names. And it was mentioned in there. So
books of dogs' names.
Of dogs' names. Just ideas for names for your dog. Bizarre. But yeah. Anyway, I looked it up and the Scroobius Pip, it's a creature that wakes up in the jungle and it doesn't know what it is. And it goes with the fish for a bit, then realizes it isn't a fish. And it goes with the lions for a bit and realizes it's fine, but it isn't a lion. And in the end, it realizes it is just a Scroobius Pip. And that's fine. It can be its own creature. So at the time, and even more so now, like I've just... this year I've done a Guy Ritchie film and a Kurt Sutter TV show in acting, and I'm doing the podcast, but I've made my career for the last 8-9 years in music and spoken words and kind of hosting a radio show and things like that. So it's that thing of going, right, I don't have to go, here's what I do. Do you know what I mean? So it does. Yeah. So it's not felt like a musician transitioning into acting or a musician transitioning into presenting. It's felt like just another thing that I'm doing. Mm-hmm. Just kind of trying something else new.
But it's all under the same umbrella of being in show business, being a showman.
And and again, all under the same umbrella, and to get kind of clinical on it, it's all under the same brand. It's all under Scroobius Pip. It's one thing. And I've said for years, what I try to do, my aim and career goals is to just keep doing cool shit. And it's as broad as that. And I don't mean that as in cool as in hip, just stuff that I'm like, damn, this is a cool opportunity. It's why I've got a club night and I run a film night at an old cinema in London and stuff like that. Because if these opportunities come up, I look at it and go, that sounds like a cool thing to do. Let's do that. So that's kind of the aim, rather than in the next 2 years I need another album or this or that. It's like, well, no, I'll just keep trying to do stuff.
I have the same vibe. If something comes across my proverbial desk that I find interesting, I'll give it a shot because...
Well, you've had a big break into acting this past year, haven't you? And comedy acting, from what I've seen as well.
With the digital series, and then they did the Sharknado thing, and all of that... You know, comes from, I would love to do this. I'll give it a try. Yeah. I think I can give it 100%. And my fan base knows if I'm doing this, that, trust me, once again, you'll like it.
I think there's a huge amount in, number one, having the confidence, but number one, having a fan base who will allow you to have that confidence to just not overthink, oh, how will this come across? What will this look like? Yeah. What will be the perception? Just rather, as exactly as you said, go, will I enjoy this?
Yeah.
And I will, so I'll do it. Rather than... Because you can spend hours thinking, well, maybe if I was to do this TV show or this film or this or that, people might not like it, or people might think, oh, he's trying to go here. Whereas if you just go, man, if I was at college or at school or whatever still, and this opportunity came up, would I be in the next day telling absolutely everyone?
Yeah.
If the answer is yes, then go ahead and do it, man. It's...
Now, let me ask you this, just as a quick little segue. You were talking about the dog's names.
Yeah.
What other names are in there? Like, do you really need a book to find a dog's name?
Exactly. It had loads of weird names. I find it, if I've not got a pet, but if I did, I'd rather go with a name that's like a normal human name, because I find that just far more hilarious. Like, just calling your dog Martin or Kevin or something just blunt like that is far more entertaining than Scroobius Pip or Patch or anything else. So
it's like Family Guy, Brian.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Yeah. Exactly. I'd far rather go that route. But yeah, it had loads of different... They had two separate books, and it shows you the crap that people will sell, particularly at Christmas and stuff like that, to have these add-on sales. There was a book of cats' names and a book of dogs' names, and it's like...
And that's like an impulse buy that people would buy. Yeah, like if you're like in the checkout line.
A pound
line,
or two at the checkout.
Yeah, and you pick it up and give it to people in the stocking.
Yeah, exactly. Know? So yeah, interesting sales.
Do you have that in England? Like, do you have stockings... And all that sort of stuff?
Yeah, we do. We become more and more Americanized with all our holidays as the years go on. And definitely that now traditional image of stockings hung up and all this
kind of
thing.
That's a very American style Christmas.
We're all over that. We love that.
Yeah. It's a lot of similarities between an English Christmas and an American Christmas.
Yeah, and an American Thanksgiving, because you do turkey and that for Thanksgiving.
That's today.
You do
that, Today's Thanksgiving. Today,
we're recording
Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving, indeed. So we do turkey and all of the, basically, essentially, all the food that I'm seeing everyone posting on Instagram at the moment, which is a sin of Instagram in many ways, that you'll suddenly, at this time
don't
of year,
that?
It'll be constant food.
I hate when people post pictures of food.
Particularly on something like Thanksgiving, because you're all having the same stuff. You know you're all eating the same stuff, so it's like, it's not that, you don't really need to share that much.
Right.
You know that's happening.
You know, in Canada, we have a phrase called Boxing Day, which comes from England.
Oh, we've got Boxing, the day after Christmas is Boxing Day.
No, it's all... For like it's all like sales and stuff like that. Yeah. What does Boxing Day mean in England?
It's the same here. It's huge. It's when the sales start. Again, it's kind of crazy because I don't understand it anymore. In the digital age, when the sales in general they start like the beginning of December these days.
Yeah.
It's kind of they start immediately. So I think the buzz of that has died a bit. But say 10-15 years ago, the sales would start on Boxing Day, and the shops would be absolutely manic, kind of like Black Friday is in America, as we see, and now over here, that there's queues around the block to get these deals. So yeah,
you have Black Friday in England as well?
We do now. Okay, only so the last couple of years. Last year was the first time, and it was all over the press because there was literally riots in certain shops and people saying, what even is this? This isn't this is a new thing to us. Why are we doing this?
But yeah, you hear people getting stabbed at Black Friday sales and
trampled.
Stuff like that.
There was all sorts of videos of people getting trampled and all sorts of silliness. On my web store on Black Friday. I've done it the last 2 or 3 years. It's the one day of a year I close my web store. Because I'm like, just don't. Because the fact is, all the Black Friday stuff, in general, in many ways, it's an insult in my books. Because it's like, right, so you can, these big companies, so that's how much you could sell it for. Why have you been charging me this much all year round? So I kind of, my theory, and it sounds cheesy, is I try and make it as affordable and accessible all year round. So on Black Friday, I just go, right, go and spend your money on a pizza instead. Or go and buy some ice cream. Or go and feed the ducks in the park. Or spend your money on something that isn't this big commercial holiday.
Right, just the one day.
Yeah.
So you mentioned that you actually started as a spoken word performer, a beat poet. I want to hear more about that and how that led you into becoming a rap artist. But first, speaking of spoken word, does narrating an audiobook count? It should. Now, I didn't narrate my own audiobook, The Best in the World at What? I have no idea. But the guy who did an interesting job. I enjoyed listening to it back. I wish it was me, but it wasn't. We just couldn't work it out schedule-wise. But the guy is a Shakespearean actor. You'll hear it in his voice. You'll hear how cool it was as he read The Best in the World at What? I have no idea. And you can check it out at audible.com/Jericho. Audible.com/Jericho is the best way to listen to any audiobook. You download your books or the shows to your phone or tablet and listen anytime, any place, anywhere. And by signing up for a 30-day trial with Audible, you'll be able to get my audiobook or choose from tons of other popular titles. Audible is the best source for everyday entertainment. They got an unmatched selection of audiobooks, original audio shows, news, and comedy. And Audible has great features to make the listening as easy and as convenient as possible. Isn't that convenient? Audible has chapter navigation, narration, speed control. You can speed the guy up so he talks faster, or you can do it slowly so you can listen to it more intently. You can even share some of your favorite excerpts with your friends. It's pretty cool. And like I said, you can access your books and shows anytime, anywhere, any place, anyhow, right from your smartphone or your tablet. Join Audible today and explore the world's leading provider of audiobooks. Enjoy the amazing performances by the talented actors and narrators that bring the books to life, like the guy who did my book, The Best in the World at What? I have no idea. You buy it, you pop it into your device or whatever it may be, and you can listen anywhere. It's great. It's a good way to listen to books. Maybe you're working. Maybe you're on the chain gang. You can't use your hands. You just listen to it on your ears. And it's a good way to do it. So start a 30-day trial. Although if you're on the chain gang, you might not be able to listen to audiobooks, but you should. Damn it, should be the right of every man and every woman. Start a 30-day trial and download your first audiobook for free. You can download The Best in the World at What? I have no idea for free. That's a good idea. Go to audible.com/Jericho to get started. That's audible.com/Jericho for a free 30-day trial and audiobook. Go do it now. Don't miss out on the books because you're too lazy to read. Come on, man. You get audible.com. You can listen to it. It's just as exciting and even more entertaining. Go do it now. England's number one podcaster, Scroobius Pip, sitting here with me. He knows how important the sponsors are to a podcast, just as important as the fantastic listeners like y'all who support our sponsors so that we can do podcasts for free every week, twice a week in my case. That's how it works, people. And I can't thank you guys enough for supporting TrueCar.com and the TrueCar app. TrueCar helped me buy my brand new 2016 Cadillac Escalade. Car buying doesn't get any easier than TrueCar. I know because, like I said, I used it. And this is how easy and fast it was. I was in and out of the dealership in about 90 minutes. Okay, 90 minutes. When's the last time you bought any car in only 90 minutes? Never happened before, but TrueCar can do that for you. And if you're not looking for a brand new car, TrueCar and the TrueCar app can also help you buy a used car. Over 500,000 pre-owned vehicles available from TrueCar certified dealers nationwide. So whether you're looking for a brand new car, a gently used car, you can get upfront pricing information from TrueCar so you can enjoy a better buying experience. Using TrueCar and the TrueCar apps lets you see what other people paid for a car you want. You can determine a fair price and feel confident, yeah, when you buy your car. TrueCar connects you with a local certified dealer of your choosing who will honor your guaranteed savings, which makes your car buying process quicker and easier. TrueCar users like me save an average of $3,279 off MSRP. I didn't save quite that much. It was a little bit under that, but still, the average is close. And over 2 million cars have been sold to TrueCar users by the TrueCar Certified Dealer Network. Don't worry about finding a certified dealer. There's over 11,000 in TrueCar's extended network. So when you're ready to buy a new or used vehicle, visit TrueCar.com or download the TrueCar app to enjoy a better car buying experience. I know I did. A brand new 2016 Cadillac Escalade in my driveway right now. I was in and out of the dealership in 90 minutes and I saved thousands of dollars. What more do you want? Go check out TrueCar.com and go do it now. And remember, some features are not available in all states. TrueCar.com. Check it out now.
It's your last chance to get great holiday savings at Guitar Center. Like a Yamaha portable keyboard, only $79. Add a month of lessons for only $99. Plus the newest and hottest guitars, drums, keys, and more. Exclusive gear you can't get anywhere else. Special financing and gift cards. The perfect present for every musician. So hurry in and find your sound at Guitar Center. Lessons available at select locations only.
So you mentioned that you kind of started almost as a rapper, but also as a spoken word performer. Was spoken word first?
Yeah, it was first. It's weird because I grew up a loving rap. And hip-hop and punk. Like, I grew up into punk and hardcore, and then I got into hip-hop because I think there's a lot of similarities. I think it's all the voice of the voiceless. It's kind of, hip-hop came up in America in the same way that punk came up in the UK. It was the lower classes or the repressed who were suddenly having a voice and suddenly having this accessibility to speak their minds and get their message out there. But then I've lived in the same small town in Essex, which is about an hour outside of London. I've lived in the same small town my whole life. So I messed about in little punk bands and little rock bands and things like that, playing a bit of bass, playing a bit of guitar, or being demoted to bass because all the guitarists were far better than me. And that's always an insult to bassists. But the fact is, I played bass because the other guitarists in the band were a lot more talented than me.
And two less strings, so it's not as confusing.
Exactly, it's simpler. But but it was that thing of I started to hear about spoken word through people like Sage Francis and Gil Scott-Heron and KRS-One even.
Like Henry Rollins too?
Henry Rollins, all sorts of people like that were blowing it up in that way. And I kind of had that realisation of, right, this is something I can do off my own back. I can't have that typical thing of, if we're not successful, it's the drummer's fault because he's not got a car and his mum has to give him a lift to every gig because he's got the drum kit and things like that. There's always other people to blame. Whereas on spoken word, I was like, right, I can live or die on my own sword here. So I'd go out and start doing open mics. I did a thing where I quit my job in a record store and I saved enough money to live for a year. And I was like, right, I'll try music and spoken word and whatever for a year. And I bought a 1987... a Toyota Space Cruiser, and I toured around the country living in my little van and just performing on street corners and performing anywhere I could, open mics, anything I could.
So would you just show up in a town, or would you get a list of open mics for the whole next 2 or 3 weeks and try and go from town to town?
It developed. I'd show up in towns and I realised quite quickly that the busiest place in the town is the town centre. That's also the place filled with the people who least want to hear spoken word or poetry or rap or whatever you want to call it. So I'd get there with all my stuff and be like, yeah, this isn't the one. And I'd either do pure a cappella, or I'd beatbox into a loop pedal and rap over the top or things like that. I'd try and variate it, but that wasn't working. So what I learned quite quick was I'd get to each town and I'd look at the local gig listings. Because in theory, if someone like DJ Shadow or even kind of your Limp Bizkits or anyone like that, someone that's got a bit of rap involved or even a bit of conscious thinking, if they're in town, they will literally get my target audience and line them up against a wall. Like, literally, because there'll be a queue outside their gig. So I would start turning up outside their shows and performing. And it was always key to me to not busk. I was like, I don't want to be asking for money, because I think there's instantly a mentality there that you're put upon. Do you know what I mean? If someone's asking for money, you're instantly like, I didn't ask you to ask me, I feel awkward. So I'd get there and I'd say, look, you've come for a gig, there's going to be a great show, there's going to be some great support acts, here's an extra support act for free. I'll give you my flyer so you know to find me on MySpace. It was in the MySpace days. So you know where to find me if there's more. And I think that's key, because I think no matter how good you are, if they're then going to see Fozzy headline, they're going to be remembering Fozzy headlining rather than the guy outside, because they know all the songs, they're there right. for that whole thing. So the key for me was to put something that's in the morning when they wake up, they're going to look and go, oh yeah, there was that guy outside, mm-hmm. and I kind of enjoyed that. And then they can, if they want to buy my stuff, it's available to buy there, okay. and so on and so forth. So
you're almost like a living billboard.
Yeah. And I did that, and it worked a really well. I built a big fan base there. My initial album, I made 1,000, and I sold all of them hand to hand over those months. And yeah, it just kind of all built.
What would you do for your performance? Would you have a pat set list? Would you improv a lot? Are you freestyling?
I don't freestyle, but I would. I practice like crazy, and that was always it. I've never felt. When we started to get a name and started to get reviewed, it was always commented on my confidence on stage, and that was due to the fact that I've spent so long practicing this. The being on stage bit is exciting. It's not nerve-wracking. Mm-hmm. It's like, this is the time I get to show how hard I've worked. And not in an arrogant way, but it's like, I know the material. So that bit I'm not worried about because of the hard work I've put in previously. So the getting to be up there and perform that is the exciting part. So, I did that. And like, for example, I then did... So 3 or 4 years after that, I did my first proper solo record on my label. And on that, one of the beats was produced by someone... who was in one of them queues.
So
he was there
you.
To see Buck 65, and he kept watching, and then it sent me some beats, and he was amazing. And then he kind of said, you know how we met, right? You gave me a flyer outside the Bucks in Camden at the Barfly. And it's like, it's crazy how these things kind of come full circle.
Now, here's something interesting too. Rapping obviously is very much being on point, spoken word, using your voice. But I noticed you have a little bit of a stutter.
Yeah. I've had a stutter since I was 4 or 5. It came from... I was on holiday in France, because they normally come from a traumatic experience.
That's where stutters usually start?
Yeah, there's generally a trigger. And I found this out through... I had hypnosis.
Really?
To find this out. I had it when I was 14 or 15, I think. So I didn't know that this was where it came from. And I was in France as a 4 or 5-year-old, and we were walking along the beach, and I think I'd just trailed back from my family, and a wave came up and took me out. And it took me quite far before my family realised, and then my dad came out and saved me. But that's kind of that's where it comes from. And I had this hypnosis, and it took me through it all, and it was like, wow, this is
You're
kidding
me.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
So stutters are caused by a traumatic experience.
Yeah,
it's not a genetic thing, or
no. They tend to be. I think there's a difference between stutters and stammers. I think stammers are often associated with other disabilities. I'm not certain. I can't speak for everyone on this, but in general, stutters, something like 90% of them come from a traumatic experience that triggers it, which I find absolutely fascinating. I think it's, I often have people mention it and say, is it awkward? It's like, no, it's amazing. How can we, it's so weird to think that, like, particularly in America, for example, there's a huge amount put on freedom of speech and the right to have freedom of speech. The fact is, I've never 100% known that, because I've never been able to say anything I want. There's certain words that I either won't be able to say, or I'll get stuck on, or get caught up. And I think it's benefited me as a performer and as a writer, because my stuff, it's quite wordy. So I think my vocabulary improved as a kid, because I'd be thinking ahead in my sentence and knowing there's words I'm going to stutter on, and I'd be replacing them with other words.
Are these like 3 or 4 syllable words, like really big words?
It's normally the beginning of the word. It's a D or a W are often bad. I'll do my little party a trick now. I've got a video online about it. There's a comedian in the UK. He's Irish, actually. And I always stutter on his name. His name's Dylan Moran. Okay. Always get caught on it.
Dylan.
Yeah, Dylan, it's that D. But it's that kind of D as well. It's weird. I don't particularly stutter on David or things. So it's just weird. It's this specific. But I met with this guy who was in another band who I was helping out and giving some advice on self-promotion and stuff like that. And he had a really bad stutter. And he showed me a technique of tapping out the syllables with his fingers on his thigh. So just going like tapping out the syllables, which I'm tapping on my thigh listening. Right. And with that... Dylan Moran, Dylan Moran,
wow.
Dylan Moran, Dylan Moran, and I can say it fine. And I made a YouTube video of this the very next morning because I was like, this is amazing. And again, I'm lucky because it's something that as I've grown up, I'm not embarrassed of. I see my stutter as similar to an accent.
Sure.
You know, there's people, as you'll see from traveling the country, if you get up to Newcastle, they sound bizarre.
Yeah.
But, you know, so it's like, I just see my voice as an accent as much as anything. But
did it ever affect you when you're rapping? Or is it like,
no.
Like, for example, there's this is kind of really old school, but there's certain people, there was a country singer called Mel Tillis in the 70s. He was in the Cannonball Run movies. Yeah. He had a really bad stutter, but when he was singing, nothing.
It's similar.
Perfect.
It's similar. It's absolutely fine. Or it tends to be. Yeah, I've never had any issues. And again, I think a lot of it, again, because I think it's mental in some way. It's in some way mental. So I think on stage, because you've got so many other things to concentrate on, you kind of just flow through. And I mean, as you'll know as well, when you've toured so much, after a few years of touring at least, they are words, but they become sounds almost.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because you're so used to them, you're not sitting there every night thinking every single word and the meaning of it. You're putting on a performance and, you know, putting it out performing.
Yeah.
So it becomes almost automatic and robotic in that way. So it just flows as if it's a never-ending word, if you know what I mean. So
tell me a little bit about the hypnosis thing. I've never been hypnotized. Like, so you went there wanting to know how did this stutter start?
Yeah, or my parents, I tried a few different bits of speech therapy. I don't particularly remember them. After my teens, I experimented with quite a few different drugs, so I don't know if that's affected my memory, but I don't remember that much of the other speech therapy. I don't now, but you know, these things, you know, kids. So I had this hypnosis, and it was to find out, to try and improve my stutter was the basis of it. And she specialized in hypnosis for speech impediments and things like that, so she was more knowledgeable than us, I guess. And she kind of explained that it's normally a traumatic thing, and she kind of just regressed me and took me back and kind of looked through a few different points in my youth.
So is it kind of one of those things where you're like, you're very sleepy and snap a finger? How do you do
it's that? Fascinating. It's really fascinating. And I learned a self-hypnosis with it because it was really good for helping my stutter as well. Mm. And I'm adamant that it affected my grades at school, because part of it, a lot of the self-hypnosis was to make me more calm and relaxed.
Mm-hmm.
But that was around the time of my GCSEs, which is the end of school exams,
like
over here. SAT kind of things. And I remember in my exams that there was like most of the exams I finished first, and the teacher would be like, do you want to go over and check? I'm like, no, I'm fine. I was so relaxed about it. I was like, nah, it's cool. I've answered what I know. You know, we'll see.
So you were
we'll
under self-hypnosis at that time?
Yeah, I'd use self-hypnosis every night. And it was just a general to make you more relaxed in life. So what she'd do, it'd be, I'd close my eyes and it'd be a set of breathing techniques that she'd give. And she'd talk me through feeling the relaxation in your toes and then up your ankles and then in the knees. And it's weird because you do start to feel that when you consciously relax your muscles, because I think in life in general, we're so consciously tense. So when we're consciously going through and relaxing each part of your body, and then it'll get to your eyelids, and she'll say to kind of prove a point, if you'd like to open them, you can, but if you try, you'll find that they're too heavy. And you do, you kind of give it a bit of a go, and you're like, oh shit, yeah, I can't open my eyes, that's weird. And we'll do that, and then with my hypnotist, she'd take you to, or she'd pick a kind of a relaxing place. And for me, she'd, and again, it's a great thing for helping you if you can't sleep, I find as well. She'd choose hang gliding.
Mm-hmm.
So she'd say, right, start at your house. And you're looking, so it'd have to be a familiar area. And you're looking down. Now go turn right and make your way along. And it'd be this whole thing. And the reason it works when sleeping, but also for hypnosis, is it's enough, it's similar to counting sheep. It's a simple enough thing to keep your mind busy from thinking about all the worries of the world, but it's not enough to keep you awake and keep your consciousness.
Okay.
So it's something to just distract you until you drift off. So we'd do that, and then she'd start to talk to me about. And again, it took a few hits. She'd say, right, we're going to go back to a point in your youth. Like, just go to the earliest thing you remember and then anything else. And then we got to this one and it seemed to be the one. And she regressed me. It was amazing because at the time it was perfectly fine. And then about an hour after she left, I had a phone call and I stuttered on the phone and I just completely broke down. As a 13 or 14-year-old, I suddenly had the emotions of that 4 or 5 year old
right.
in the water. So not even, it was weird. It wasn't even the memories, and it's the memories as a 14 or 15 year old.
Yeah.
It was that absolute just kind of feeling like a child, feeling like a scared child of the waves going into my mouth. And it was fascinating because she also found that I used to have a recurring dream as a kid that there was a witch in my living room mm-hmm. and I'm in bed and the witch is coming up the stairs and I'm trying to scream to my parents and I can't, and it's just a paralyzing fear of trying to scream but you can't get help, and the witch is slowly coming up the stairs. And she said that's from that experience, because as I was trying to scream for help, the waves were going wow. in my mouth. So every time I was trying, which again makes you wonder if that's to do with the stutter kind of thing as well, because it was that restriction of speech, but right. every time I tried to scream, a wave would go in my mouth and I couldn't scream. And it was this thing of, I can see my parents,
right.
I know where help is, but I can't signal it and get
that.
It. So, yeah, it's
kind of
had all
interesting.
That.
I took method acting classes for about a year, about 10 years ago or so. And to method act, like the old Stanislav Strasberg, Dustin Hoffman, Al Pacino, is you drop into this character. And how you'd start as a student is you would sit there in class completely quiet, and same thing, you'd start with tingling in your toes and have it move up your body to where you're completely relaxed.
Yeah,
and then the teacher would go, think of a time in your life when you felt abandoned, like if you were left at a Walmart or a department store and you lost your parents. Yeah. Now, think about that, and then now you're playing this character that's abandoned. That's how you drop into the character.
Yeah.
You go back to your childhood experiences. So it's very similar to the hypnosis
I think hypnosis gets walked a little bit from TV shows and stuff like that. I don't know if any of that's true, but I certainly don't think that
the
she
pendulum
could have,
back and
that's
forth.
It. And I certainly don't think she could have made me drink,
urine or something.
Urine or something like that. You
it's a tasty milkshake.
I felt conscious the whole time, but relaxed and allowing her to kind of talk and talk to my subconscious. But yeah, exactly. It's a similar thing there of using these techniques. And again, it's fascinating because we don't understand the brain at all.
Right.
It's one of the greatest mysteries still to us. We don't really know what's going on in there. We can see energy and we can see activity, but we can't really define what all these things are. So it's fascinating, things like that, of learning to use your brain and learning to access part of your brain that you maybe hadn't used before. And techniques, as you said there, of regressing yourself back to go, right, that's the experience. Now I'm putting that out there. In my mind, I'm the 5 year old lost, but in everyone else's view, you're a scared kind of lost person. You know,
right. It's a lot of similarities, like we were saying. And you mentioned self hypnosis and kind of standing in line, doing your show in front of people. You're very kind of a do it yourself type of a guy. Now, I rarely do research when I do these shows, but Adam pointed out to me about the video that you have, one of your videos that's got like 2.5 million views online.
Yeah.
That was probably
Introdiction, I think, that I made for £100.
And what's the song called?
It's called Introdiction.
Introdiction, which means?
Introdiction. Introdiction.
Gotcha.
The early lines is, this piece of diction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. So yeah. Which was that album.
So tell us about this, but you made this video for £100.
£100. And again, it's bizarre because it's made for £100. It's got a Travis Barker on drums.
Okay.
And
so Travis is obviously a fan.
Emila Jovovich doing backing vocals, and Danny Alonna from Nine Inch Nails produced it.
You're like all-star cast.
You know, it was crazy. And because that was the first thing. So I made my name with a guy called Dan Lesac, and that's still the bulk of my body of work.
Dan Lesac.
So Dan Lesac versus Scroobius Pip was still, we've had years of touring, we've stopped working together now, but still I love the guy, and that's how we kind of came up. And Distraction Piece is my album, which is also the name of the podcast. It's getting confusing. Was just something I decided to do because me and Dan, it was more electronic and hip-hop. And as I said, I grew up listening to punk and hardcore. So I was like, I want to do something that combines my spoken word and my rapping, but with more live instruments and live drums. And Danny Lona from Nine Inch Nails had tweeted some of my lyrics. Mine and Dan's first big song was called A Thou Shalt Always Kill. And it's basically rewriting the commandments for modern times.
Right.
You know, one of the commandments we get brought up regularly is thou shalt give equal worth to tragedies that occur in non-English speaking countries as to those that occur in English speaking countries, which is obviously hugely relevant as you've just been in Europe with all the stuff going on in Paris
right.
and stuff like that, and how stuff can get ignored if it's not American or English or the Western world. Yeah. So there's things like that. And so Danny Ilona had tweeted that, and I hit him up saying, look, I'm making this record that's more in your area. Would you like to get involved? And he got Travis involved and Mila.
Is Danny bass player?
He was production on loads of it. So he plays bass, he plays guitar. Live, he was guitar, I think, and some synths. But so we made this track, but it was the first thing I was releasing on my own label. And I don't come from a wealthy background. I've not got tons of money. So I was like, right, let's make a video. And it was my first go at directing my own videos as well. I had my mates working with me. My friend Tom, who I used to do photography with at college, was the cameraman. You know, it was all amateur. And I rented a metal container, like a storage container, like you put on ships and all that kind of thing. I rented one of them for £70. And then I spent £30 on some props. And the video had to be done in one take. Because basically I start rapping. And as I'm going, I start cutting off my beard. And then I start shaving my head. And then I set a hobby horse on fire and start setting things on fire. Which, again, because we couldn't have a dry run. And basically, my thinking there was, if I ask the people I'm renting the container from and they say no, then we can't shoot the video. If I just do it, we can only do it once anyway. So if we get told off afterwards, it's like it's done.
So what did you do with the container? You threw the hobby horse that was on fire in the container?
So we filmed it all inside a shipping container. So it's just a big metal box.
Oh, so it's like a big storage?
A big storage box. Yeah.
I was thinking just a barrel.
Storage Wars. Okay. It's like Storage Wars. Gotcha. That's my
the American connection of it.
So yeah, in one of them, but we had the door closed. And so again, the song goes through. It's all gone well. And my initial thinking was, right, I've got 100 quid. How can I get everyone who is into me and Dan to listen to my solo stuff? And the initial thing was, cut my beard off in the video. If word gets round, I cut my beard off in the video, everyone will at least look at it.
Right.
You know, and then if they like it or not is a different thing, but I knew it'd get all the eyes on it. And song Thou Shalt Always Kill has now had 7 or 8 million views on YouTube. So we had a few that had the following, so I was like, right, I need to get them here. So we did that, and then I set everything on fire, and it all went up a lot more than I was expecting. So it's getting very smoky, and there's a line in there about horses. So I had a hobby horse, and I set the hobby horse on fire. But we thought, again, we've only got one take, so we need to cover it in petrol to make sure it goes up. And it really went up. So we're setting everything on fire, and then we finish, cut. My mate's there with a fire extinguisher. I open the doors and storm out. And as I storm out, the guy who owns the yard is walking past. Smoke is bellowing out. And he looked over at me and just went, Pip, I don't even want to know. And I was like, I was so happy. I was like, that's exactly what I needed to hear. It's fine. Don't come in here for an hour. It'll look exactly the same as it looked when you gave it to us. And yeah, I shot that. The video went down well. There's a particular line in it that kind of went crazy at the time. And it's weird. I'm sure you'll have the same. When you're writing, you don't really know what's good, but you don't really know what's going to really click.
Stick, yeah.
And there was a line in there that said, you see a mousetrap, I see free cheese and a challenge. And that just went crazy online. Happens to be tweetable. It was long enough to be tweeted.
It's
like
140 characters.
Exactly. So, and that kind of blew that video up. And yeah, again, for £100 spent, it really launched my label and the solo record, which again, there was loads of stuff on there that was all more, as I said, more guitar based and more heavy, but still with that hip hop influence. And
the smart thing was, though, you were intelligent enough to realize, if I cut my beard off, people will tune in just to watch that.
Yeah, exactly. And whether they're annoyed or shocked or happy or excited, it was as simple as that. I was like, right, if I cut off, because it kills me that beards have become such a big thing recently, because I'm not that into beards. I don't really, people will tweet me stuff about them all the time, or memes or jokes about them. It's like, it's hair, it doesn't matter, it grows back.
Have you had a beard for a long time?
I've had a beard for 10 years now.
So you had it before the beard became the thing.
Which is the most hipster thing to be able to say. If you know what I mean? To be able to say to hipsters, I had it before it was cool, is the ultimate hipster
right,
line.
Right,
so it's like, there's no getting away from it. So yeah, it was kind of, but that was the thing. I was like, yeah, it will grow back, I don't care. So it was that thing of looking at all as my, and originally I grew the beard when I started doing that tour, living in a van, because I thought, if I'm living in a van, I don't want to have to deal with shaving every day. So I was like, so just before I started, I thought, I'll start growing a beard. As I said, I started it, I was working in a record store, and I knew I was going to quit and try music for a year. So I started growing a beard a bit before, and almost a year to the day after I quit, Thou Shalt Always Kill came out, which was the song I mentioned, which was our first single with Dan Lesak, and he got in the top 40 and got us touring America and Japan and everything else, and kind of
touring in a van, basically living in a van for a year.
I mean, it was good. I mean, I did on and off. I'd come home. Like, I lived at my mum's still, so okay. You know, I was living on a low budget, but it was fine, and it prepped me well for the 8 years that came after that of touring, touring. You know, I was used to that. Having a splitter van even was a luxury. Yeah. Having a van that had a TV in, it was like, this is great. Previously, it was because the one when I was doing it on my own, it was just the back seats are folded down to make a double bed, and that was that was it. So. Yeah, it was kind of good, and then it set us up for years of being on the road. And I'm off from touring for a year or two at the moment to try acting, to concentrate on the podcast a bit and all that. And I'm regularly at a loss because I'm so used to touring life. I get home and there's no rider and no one's
your road dog.
There's no per diem. There's no money to. It's
no
confusing.
Tour manager telling you what to do,
exactly.
Where to go.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I just got off the bus like today. I was like, I got up. Tour manager's like, hey, you're getting in the car. Where are we going? You're going to Classic Rock, going to Planet Rock, coming back here. Just point me in the right direction and push me, and that's where I go. And then I go home. I don't know what to do with myself.
Yeah.
You know
it's amazing. It's weird you get in those routines. And I used to go out with a girl in America who was far more famous and successful than me, and she had to have a PA organizing her every day.
Yeah.
And at first I was like, this is weird, man. I don't know how you can live like that. And as soon as I was there and in it, I was like, this is the only way you can live, because there's so much. It's like it seemed weird when we first started dating. I'd be like, so what are you doing on Thursday? She'd be like, I don't really know. I'll find out on Wednesday, kind of thing. And I was like, this is bizarre. But then when you're again, it occurred to me that's why I'm like with touring.
Yeah.
It's exactly the same with touring. It's like, I know the gig listings.
Yeah.
It's the day before. They'll generally go, so we've got some radio, we've got some TV, we've got this. Yeah. We got that, so that just becomes your
venue. What time is the show out? Time is VIPs.
It makes sense.
What you were talking about, you know, working in the States and living in the States and all that sort of stuff, and also about touring, and also about, you know, the social media and all that sort of stuff. And I know we were talking about how important it is for you to do that.
Yeah.
What did you do? I love the story, but when you said you would do if you get 100,000 followers.
Yeah, it was good. I was kind of, I'd said, I was on about 70,000 followers on Twitter, I think. And again, it still blows me away every day that I get to do this for a living. And this is, again, I've worked in factories, in delivery vans, in all sorts of things. It's mind blowing that this is my life now. I love that. And I said, when I get to 100,000, I'll take as many of you that want to come out for a drink. And again, that sounds more grand a gesture than it is, because it's the reality that there's 100,000 spread over the world, and they're not all going to travel down to London.
Check for, what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly. They're not going to all come to London for one drink. You know, I'm not. I didn't guarantee them drinks all night.
Yeah.
You
said a drink.
A drink, yeah. And then I got to 100,000, or I was getting close to it, and someone reminded me. So then when I got to 100,000, I posted this original tweet from like a year or two before, and I said, look, let's do it. I'll arrange it in London. Give me a few days and I'll sort out a venue and we'll arrange it, which was all fine until a BuzzFeed featured it, and Lad Bible and numerous other huge sites that have millions of followers, and they're all nice, but they were like, oh, what a nice guy Pip is. I'm like, give me that praise after it's gone. Don't do it now that you're getting. So I had thousands of people saying, I'm definitely coming. We're going to make you bankrupt and all this kind of thing. I was like, look, I'll do it. So I only announced it the day before, and I arranged with a bar. I was like, look, have you got any like a brands of beer that are up for some, you know, a bit of a deal?
Skunky brand.
So it was a specific, this band, Pistonhead, which is a big kind of a rock and roll lager over it. It's got a picture of a skull on the beard. It looks great. And they were like, look, we'll sort out a load of crates and, you know, we'll do you a deal, blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, I went to this bar, and I'd say only about 100 or so people ended up coming in. But I went round and spent some time with everyone there and sat down and had a chat and engaged and interacted and kind of said, cheers, like, thanks for making this my life.
How much was the bill?
I didn't have to pay a penny. they sorted it out. Because it was specifically Piston Head and all this kind of thing, they said, look, because they were a new brand as well, I think, so they had a certain amount of commercial.
Shout out to Piston Head.
Yeah, damn right. See, yeah. So, yeah, it didn't actually cost me a thing. Although, I think the bill came to about £40 in the end because I chose to not drink Piston Head, so which is now a terrible damnation of them. So I'm giving everyone this beer and then I'm getting my own.
Right, right. You guys drinking can drink that. A swill, but I'm not going to have that.
It was really nice. I just wasn't a lager drinker at the time. I was a cider drinker. Yeah, gotcha. But yeah, it was all very affordable and all.
And talk about a great publicity stunt. And, yeah. You know, kind of like, here's what Scroobius is doing today.
Again, it worked nicely, man. I had a few things all in one go at that time, and yeah, it got picked up on a lot of websites, and the fact I went through with it got picked up even more, and people seem to be into it.
Makes you a man of the people.
Exactly, and it works nicely, and it's a thing I've always done. I've always me and Dan Lesac are quite known for a couple of things when we tour. Number one, always taking support acts that we're into, so our fans tend to get there from the start and stay till the end, because it's good value. If you're paying for a ticket and coming to a gig, like we come and see all the bands. Or you're touring a whole tour, basically, aren't you? You've got the same bands on the whole run.
And we put a lot of thought into who we're taking out with us and what's the vibe of the whole show going to be from doors until close.
It makes a difference. It gives you know there's that professionalism then. And that's not hating on local support, but you never know who you're going to get. It could be a friend of the promoter. It could be this or that. And it's like, well, you know that this is going to be, from when the first bit of music plays, it's going to be a professional night out.
Yes.
So things like that. But then also, we've always run our own merch booths. So I'll be on merch after the show.
Really?
And we did it when we did two nights at Coco, which is in London, which is 2,500 cap, I think. And we had two nights sold out, and even there we did our own merch booth.
Really?
And we split it, so Dan Lesac didn't do the merch booth, he went out the front and met fans, so it had just stopped that kind of the bottleneck and bum rush. But again, it's that weird thing outside of Coco. In fact, Dan had a fan come up to him and go, that Pip, it's all about commercialism, isn't it? Like, he's at the merch booth because he'll sell more. And again, it's a really weird thing. Obviously there's always going to be cynics, but part of that's true, but it's one of them situations where it's a win-win for everyone. We will obviously sell three times as much merch if we're selling it personally, but the reason I started doing it was I went to see Sage Francis once, who's a rapper from Providence, Rhode Isle, and he was doing his own merch booth, and I bought CDs I already had because I was so excited to buy them off of Sage.
Yeah.
And it's weird, it's come full circle now, because I released his last album on my label, so it's this cool thing. But seeing that, I was like, right, so everyone gets to have a photo, everyone gets to, if they want one, if they can wait through the queues, everyone gets to buy anything and have it signed, and we, on the financial side, we make more money as well. But I don't see how that, you should be cynical about that. That's a win for everyone.
Well, yeah, it's like doing an in-store. I really believe in doing in-stores where a lot of bands don't. And I don't understand that attitude, because people, you know, we were talking earlier about the music business and stuff, but people still like to get the signature, the handshake, pressing the flesh.
It means the world. It means the world. And, and it's easy. It's more and more easy to buy a signed CD online now, but I feel it's even more if you're there with that person and you're talking to them, and you get that, even if it's 10, like obviously in in-stores, it's a brief thing, there's a queue, you're getting through, but you do get that moment of engagement. And I'll have that at gigs now. I'll have people that will come up or come to shows or come to my club night or film club, and I remember you from Oxford. I remember that gig, and it means the world to people. But if you have that brief moment, it sticks in your mind.
Yeah.
The gigs, not that the gigs don't, but the gigs, you're doing a lot of the same songs over and over again every night.
Right.
So those engagements at the end are different every night. That's the bit that really can stick in your head.
Yeah. Right, yeah. You mentioned your film club and you mentioned your acting. I know you're doing some stuff. You mentioned with Guy Ritchie, and then you're doing The Bastard Executioner
with Kurt Sutter.
So this is kind of a new world for you now, getting into the acting side of things.
Absolutely brand new to me, but I got kind of a recommended it. I've had Simon Pegg on my podcast, and Riz Ahmed, and some other actors, and it's people I've got to meet through them being fans of my music and me being fans of their stuff. And because a lot of the music videos I've always directed and been in, and there's a level of acting in it, and on stage, again, I have some quite serious and dark songs and some quite up-tempo kind of party songs. So they were quite adamant. They were like, you know, you've been acting for the last 8-9 years. Like, you've been going on stage, and when you're doing, for example, a song called You Will See Me, which is a really angry kind of breakup type song, you know, when you're doing that, you're not really angry, but you're acting and you're drawing those emotions. And in that moment, you're living it. And they're like, that's all acting is. And they kind of talked me into trying it out. So I started to talk to some casting directors. And then out of nowhere, like in the year I decided to take off to try this, without me approaching him, I got an email from the casting director who was doing the new Knights of the Round Table, which Guy Ritchie has done, which comes out next year. They hit me up out of the blue saying, look, a guy's a fan of the podcast, he's a fan of your music, he'd like you to come and audition. And again, it's that kind of nice thing of, it's not a free pass, but it's a chance to
mutual
go and audition.
Mutual respect opens the door.
Yeah, exactly that. And it's I had a meeting with a casting director who looks after Andrew Garfield, who played Spider-Man recently, and loads of some big people. And I said to her, look, I want to start at the bottom. I want to just work hard. I want to learn. I want to be around everyone. And she sat me down and said, that's adorable, but that's the stupidest idea I've ever heard. And she said, look, the fact is, there's people in the industry that you know who are fans of you. If you're shit, you won't get the gig. Mm-mm. But that could get you an audition. And then if you can do it, it gets you in the door. So she was like, don't be afraid to use the fact that you've got a profile, you've got a name. And her argument was, that's not cutting the queue. That's 8 years of work that you've been doing in another area.
Yeah.
Paying off and getting you in there. So, yeah.
And like you said, when you're singing, I had the same thing. I get the same thing, you know. Oh, you're acting now? It's like I've been acting for 25 years.
Yeah.
Because when you go into the ring or go on stage.
Yeah, completely.
You have to become something else.
Well, I remember listening on... when you had Dean Ambrose on the podcast, I think it was, and I think he'd recently done a film.
Yeah, he did the movie,
And you were both saying how it was kind of bizarre that you get multiple goes at it. Because in your industry, you've got your lines, you've got your moment, it's live.
Right.
You do this and it's done. Whereas you're doing it in a studio in front of loads of cameras, like, right, we're going to do that 10 more times from this angle, and then we're going to change angle and do it another 10 times. It's like, oh, wow, this isn't half as much pressure as I'd imagine what you'd had previously of live and in front of a huge crowd.
Well, you're used to being live, exactly. Yeah. And you get no second chances, no second take.
And again, it is different and there's different skills to learn, but still, it prepared you well, I guess, from having that experience of having to do it live and having that.
How was it working with Kurt Sutter?
It was amazing. Yeah. He's such a great guy. He hit me up because on the Guy Ritchie film, the lead in that is Charlie Hunnam, who's from Sons of Anarchy and things like that. So he was emailing Kurt my music, and Kurt hit me up saying, look, I'm loving your music. Would you be up for doing some music for this new TV show I'm doing? And I said, nah, put me in it. I said, look, I'm acting now. I was like, if there's anything that works. And the fact is, the two things I've done are medieval. And I've got a big beard, and I look medieval. You know, it's that.
You have an English accent.
An English accent and a big beard. It's like, it's perfect time. With Game of Thrones and everything else playing up, it's the perfect time to be British and have a beard. You know, and to add that added addition of coming from a different background, that extra intrigue of being a musician, it seems to work. So I met up with Kurt, and again, like, we hit it off instantly. And he asked me to come and audition, and I auditioned, and it went down well. And the feedback I got from Kurt and Paris Barkley, who's a great director, who's done, he did a lot of Sons of Anarchy, but he also did Don't Be a Menace Whilst Drinking Juice in the Hood, and some old rap videos. He did the Mama Said Knock You Out video for LL Cool J in the day, and things like that. So they kind of got back to me and said, look, the thing that they loved was, it's so hard to get actors to do medieval stuff and not overact it.
Yeah,
I was saying, a lot of the auditions they're getting, people going, I will take them now, and just, you know, really getting into it.
To be or not to be.
Yeah, exactly. And they kind of said, what we want is you to be you. So I just went in there and kind of,
which is the easiest thing to do. Yeah,
exactly. So I did my lines as me, and yeah, they loved it, and it went down a treat. I ended up having, the week after I had you on Distraction Pieces, I had Kurt on. And it was crazy because we were going to do again an hour, and that was it. We ended up talking for 3 hours.
Wow.
And my parking went over. I'd only paid for an hour and a half on the parking. But it was that great thing of, we kind of had that the first time we met. We really hit it off and just were on a similar wavelength and got on well. So
And that's the chemistry there.
Yeah,
is a great way to build that relationship.
And it's exciting. I'm really a nerd for these things. I'm a massive film nerd and TV nerd. I love these things. So all the time I was there, even if I wasn't in a scene, I was watching on the monitors. I was trying to just learn
drink
and be engaged, because it's exciting. Like, in the last week, I was riding a horse on a beach and stabbing people and getting like big fights with explosions and fight scenes. And I got to, it's been on in America. Ed Sheeran,
yeah,
huge pop star, is also in it.
Okay.
So he had a role. And in the last season, in the last episode of the series, in the battle scene, I'm not going to say who lives or dies or anything else, but I do get to stab Ed Sheeran, which was huge for me. I've known Ed for years. Like, I did, he came up on the scene around right. a similar scene to me, but he is a massive pop star with loads of teeny girly fans who wouldn't be into my shit at all. So it was a huge win to get to stab
Ed Sheeran
in the final battle
scene. How is the Bastard execution? I haven't checked it out yet. Is it?
I've not watched any of it yet because it's not in the UK yet.
Oh,
so it's not over here yet. And I can't illegally download something I'm in. That feels terrible. Yeah. I don't support that anyway, but still, it's like even more so. I was like, man, I can't. But from everything I've heard from people in America, all saying just all loving it. And again, I've got some really, that's worth mentioning actually, just again on the social media front, I've had some amazingly lovely messages from people on my acting debut essentially, because although I filmed this after King Arthur, it's the first thing that's gone out because King Arthur is now until next year. So yeah, just amazing feedback and lovely words from people just complimenting on the performance, which I've not seen still.
Yeah.
But it's nice because, again, there is that thing. I was aware as soon as I walked on set. I mean, I was with Stephen Moyer, who's a vampire Bill in True Blood.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, loads of amazing
actors.
Some real pros. So I knew I was the new boy, but they were all so welcoming and so warm and helpful. And, yeah,
yeah.
It was great to then get... Katie, who's a Gemma in Sons of Anarchy as well, was in it, and
she really led
me along in certain scenes and things like that. Like, we only had one or two together, but it was so nice to have these people who I've watched and been a fan of and appreciate, just being so, it's all right,
the true pros just helping you,
and we'll get you through this, it's easy. Like, don't be nervous. I was relaxed from day one on that, so yeah, it was lovely.
Last question, what are some of your favorite distraction pieces episodes?
I mean, there's been loads, and it really varies. People like Wes Borland coming on and talking really openly. It was amazing to have Wes, because Wes is another person who I'm working on some music for my next solo record.
Guitar player from Limp Bizkit.
Yeah, but having him just speak openly about the positives and negatives of how big Limp Bizkit got, mm-hmm. and how they became such a jock type thing, and he was very much the one that was painted and
wearing the gorilla suits on stage.
Thing, and then there's this. So just speaking so openly and honestly on that. But kind of all sorts of people. I had... A rapper from a group called Run the Jewels, a rapper called Killer Mike, and that sounds like a scary, aggressive guy. And he spoke so articulately and intelligently on all the issues facing Black America at the moment, and the gun crime, and it was one of the most amazing things I've ever heard. It was so beautifully put. He's now recently been on CNN and on all sorts of stuff speaking politics because he's got a voice for it, but. Yeah, a few like them are absolutely amazing. But I'd also like to say a few of my favourite episodes of Talk is Jericho.
Please.
So, William Regal is just what a guy. Just that was just for me as a British guy to hear him talking about the British scene and then his going over to America and things like that. But R-Truth just blew my mind.
Wow.
Dude danced with Tupac and stuff like that. Like,
and that picture's online.
You wouldn't have predicted that at all. It's
you can find the
amazing.
Picture of Tupac and R-Truth online.
I love stuff like that because, again, I love that. And again, as you've said, that you don't like to just talk about wrestling, but the beautiful thing is when you do have wrestlers on, even, you hear other sides of them. And
sure.
There's wrestlers that I don't watch as much as I used to. I still watch a fair amount. I'm lying a bit there. I'm watching every week now, but you know, I'm a busy guy. I'm a busy guy. But just getting things like that and getting these insights and yeah, things like that of R-Truth or Killings or you know, and seeing all that side of it, and that history in dance.
That's
and
the beauty of podcasting. You get a chance to really get to know people. Like, even with Dean Ambrose, we were talking one day about Bigfoot. I'm like, you're into that? He goes, I love it. I go, dude, set up the mic right now. Let's talk paranormal. Yeah. Dean Ambrose, and just talked about that sort of stuff.
I love it.
People like seeing that other side of the coin as well. So,
and it gets that much more exciting. I had a comic book guy called Garth Ennis on who wrote Preacher and The Boys and loads of really big things. And I was excited in general. Then the bit that we both nerded out on was he mentioned The Shield, which incidentally Kurt Sutter wrote, but I was a massive fan of the TV series
The Shield. Okay.
Yeah. He mentioned that. And we just nerded out for 20 minutes on that because no one really talked. Everyone talks about The Wire and a few others, but The Shield was amazing. So we had that moment of, and then I had to rein myself in and go, right, I should talk more about his comic books because his fans are going to be listening that want to hear that, not hear us go, and have an episode two when this happens and all that. So, yeah, it's a great format. It's a beautiful thing. Yeah,
absolutely.
There.
Well, that's how we became buds on Distraction Pieces. Scroobius Pip, well, I'll never forget your name.
Perfect.
Nor your sexy
beard.
Thanks to Scroobius Pip, England's number one podcaster, for joining us here on Talk is Jericho and for having me on his podcast as well. It was a great time. It's called Distraction Pieces. Check out his podcast at iTunes or on his website, scroobiuspip.co.uk. Thank you to Scroobius. And just what a killer name. I just love that name. Great guy, and we had a blast on the show. Thanks to Scroobius, and thanks to all of you for supporting my great Talk is Jericho sponsors, audible.com. Go to audible.com/Jericho for a free 30-day trial and audio book. And ddpyoga.com/Jericho. Get 10% off anything you paddle choose for a limited time, including the new collector's edition of the Resurrection of Jake the Snake documentary. It's amazing. And, of course, the OG original gangsta sponsor, Amazon. Easiest way to support this show. Please use my Amazon links anytime you do online shopping. All the links at podcast1.com. Click on the Killer Deals button in the top right corner of the page. Then hit the Talk is Jericho button. I got Amazon links for the USA, UK, Canada, A. Every time you use the Talk is Jericho Amazon links, Amazon kicks back a small percentage to this show to help us cover production costs. Anything you can think of on Amazon, you can buy it. And I want you to be a Talk is Jericho Amazon warrior. Post a picture of what you bought on the Twitter at Talk is Jericho, and then I'll retweet it and I'll follow you. How's that sound? Be an Amazon warrior for Talk is Jericho. Don't forget, go to podcast1.com. Click on the Killer Deals button in the top right corner of the page, UAG, then hit the Talk is Jericho button. Thank you for listening. Keep listening for the 60-second AP news headlines coming up next. Stay hard, stay hungry. Peace, love, and hugs. Thank you so much for listening. Go check out The Conjuring last week, the Sandro Toffolini talking about the Benoit tragedy. Thanks to Scroobius Pip. And on Friday, it is July 1st, which is Canada Day, and I am bringing to you the Canadian Rock Show with my good friends Brent Fitz and Todd Kearns from Slash's band with Miles Kennedy. They are part of the Conspirators and old friends of mine. I went to high school with Fitz. I used to hate him, as you hear all about it. And Todd Kearns, of course, a tremendous singer, guitar player, bass player. Both of them rocked it with Slash for the last 4 or 5 years, now on hiatus as Slash is rocking with Guns N' Roses. We played in Coverboy together. It's going to be Brett Fitz, Todd Kearns, and my good friend Solo Cup Jeff, another high school buddy of mine, all together for the Canadian Rock Show. We're going to talk about the greatest Canadian rock and roll bands of all time, a big slice of Canadiana, what it's like to grow up in Canada together in Winnipeg. It's a good time. Always fun to get together with a group of my friends, and this is very much like the 25th anniversary show when it was Dr. Luther, Don Callis, and Lance Storm. It's the opposite of that. It's the music version of that. Brent Fitz, Todd Kearns, Solo Cup Jeff are going to be here on Friday for the Canadian Rock Show. We'll see you then. A big yeah, boy. How's it going, eh? Gonna drink it too far, eh? On Canada Day. Canadian Rock Show. All right. Okay, come on, eh?
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcast1.com. That's podcastone.com. Okay, Kevin, for the grand prize of $1 million, what color is the White House?
I know this.
5 seconds.
Oh, switching to Geico could save you a bunch of money on car insurance?
Okay. Judges? That's true, Kevin. They'll allow it. Congratulations. You're a winner.
Woo!
Geico, because saving 15% or more on car insurance is always a great answer.
It's your last chance to get great holiday savings at Guitar Center. Like a Simmons SD550 electronic drum kit, just $399. Add your choice of AKG K52 headphones or a Shure SM48 mic, each just $39. Plus, the newest and hottest guitars, drums, keys, and more. Exclusive gear you can't get anywhere else. Special financing, lessons for the beginner on your list, and gift cards. The perfect present for every musician. So hurry in and find your sound at Guitar Center.
Trump's victory. I'm Ed Donahue with an AP News Minute.
It's always a lot of fun when you win. If you work hard and lose, that's not acceptable.
At the White House, President Trump welcomed Republicans from the House and the Senate who passed a bill overhauling the tax code. The president says the middle class will be seeing the effects of this bill very soon.
The typical family of four earning $75,000 will see an income tax cut of more than $2,000. They're going to have $2,000, and that's in my opinion, going to be less than the average. You're going to have a lot more than that.
The tax overhaul bill also includes a corporate tax cut.
We have companies pouring back into our country, and that means jobs, and it means really the formation of new, young, beautiful, strong companies.
Democrats have criticized the tax package as a giveaway to corporations and the rich. The tax cuts for businesses are permanent under this tax bill, but reductions for individuals and families will expire after a decade. I'm Ed Donahue.